Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I want to welcome everyone and thank all of you for coming and really thank the City Club for hosting this event again. As was mentioned, this is my 11th State of the City address. Now, in the past, in the majority of those addresses, I've given a speech and I've taken answers. And most recently, I've been using moderators and taking questions. Now, this year, I'm going to try something new, and we'll see how it works. But I'll continue to take questions after I finish. So let's get started. Now, Cleveland is a successful city, and it's positioned to become a great city, but it's not guaranteed. We have the opportunity to be great, but whether or not we get there will depend on whether or not we have the ability and the willingness to engage and accept the challenges that are before us. Now, I'm not going to recite a list of successes or focus on any one event or one project. Rather, I'm attempting to look at a context of where we are, where we need to be, and the challenges that face us on that road. It is never the challenge that matters. Never the challenge. It's always about how we deal with those challenges. So what are the challenges that we face? How are we dealing with those challenges? And how do we find success as we work through those challenges? Now, many times people define success in different ways. You know, sometimes we define it as a policy. We have great policies, so we're successful. Or we have great economic development activities, so we're successful. We're financially and budgetarily stabilized, so we're successful. We deliver good service. And I can go on and on about how we look at success, but I will say that these things are not a complete measure of success. All these things are tools. They're just tools. Tools that are needed for us to be successful, but they're not a true definition of success. All we do and all about what we do is about people and how do we create a better result for them. A great city will be measured by the well-being and the condition of its people, and particularly the least of us. And I'm not talking about in terms of welfare and charity, but I'm talking about how can everyone participate in that quality of life, in that prosperity and standard of living that we create as a community. Now, this is a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift. As opposed to celebrating the tools that I mentioned, Cleveland has to celebrate people and people's lives being transformed. So let's talk about some of the challenges that we're facing and what we have to do as we move forward. The challenge of attitude is one that Cleveland has met and has gone a long way in overcoming. You know, at my first State of the City, a lady asked me what was I going to do about the way people, including Clevelanders, view Cleveland. Outsiders view Cleveland as a mistake, a joke, while Clevelanders were clinically depressed with low self-esteem. Now, all this has changed, however, as outsiders are pleasantly surprised at what Cleveland has to offer, and Clevelanders now believe in Cleveland and really take a lot of pride in talking about this new Cleveland. It is not just one thing that caused that change in attitude. It was gradual. It was a gradual thing. Cleveland became a place where businesses wanted to locate. People wanted to live downtown. Some neighborhoods became destinations for food, entertainment, lifestyle. Cleveland became a place for movie making, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, induction ceremony once every 3 years. We have the gay games, the senior games, just to name a few. And most recently, we won the Republican National Convention. Now, Cleveland is no longer a place that is avoided. It's not avoided. We no longer just put on a good show or come in second or put on a good effort. Cleveland has become a winner. Everything Cleveland has been successful at as a city is because we have done it as a community, an entire community, and we've done it with a winning attitude that we can do this. The greatest example of that is the Cleveland School Reform Plan. Republicans, Democrats, labor, business, district, charter schools, the philanthropic community, everybody came together to create real school reform. But it was the public, the citizens of Cleveland, who closed the deal by supporting and passing a levy, an operating levy in 2012, and a capital levy in 2014. Now, this operating levy challenge is up for renewal and will test our resolve to have true reform and test whether or not we are truly committed. This is also a vote of confidence as to whether or not our school district is moving in the right direction. Now, there have been some successes. The Pre-Cleve program has added over 1,200 preschool slots in its first year of implementation. 86% of the school district's third graders are reading at or above their level. The National Association of Education Progress report ranks our school district as one of three of 21 large urban school districts in this country that has improved in all four areas of fourth and eighth grade reading and math. Now, we have Superintendent Gordon has set up these district investment schools. These are schools that had been failing. They were Fs. And he's changed them in a way to reprogram them and repopulate them in a way that 100% of these investment schools have shown growth in reading, and 96% have shown growth in math in the first half of this current school year. Our graduation rate has increased by almost 14% since 2011. But all of these are just indicators of us moving in the right direction. But we are still behind. We are still behind where we need to be in order to have quality education for all of our children. An intangible indicator of the school system moving in the right direction is the positive attitude of its teachers, its staff, the parents, and the students. They believe that we can and that we will be successful. Now, education is the key to our success. It's key. A city that provides quality education for its children will retain and grow population, maintain and attract new businesses, and position itself for the future. In order to better ensure that future, we cannot just rely on the graduation from high school, but we must have a continuum of higher education and skill development, access to that higher education and skill development by pre-qualifying our young people for grants that they qualify for and scholarships, and increase college graduation by having the college and the university that we're partnering with wrap around our students to better guarantee their completion. Now, this is happening through our education, higher education compact, which is a partnership of 18 colleges and universities, as well as our school district, College Now, community partners, business community, and the foundations. Now, finally, on this, creating an economy that will absorb college graduates and people who have been trained and keeping them in our region and attracting others will move us towards success. Cleveland in this region has a very diverse economy, from healthcare, education, research, financial institutions, service industry to manufacturing. Now, all of these sectors are doing fine. They're showing growth. Since I became mayor, we have 857 projects that total over $344 million in city investment in one form or another, leveraging over $3 billion in total investment, creating over 18,000 jobs and retaining over 12,000 jobs. Now, this does not include the billions of dollars that have been invested in Cleveland, not just the region, but in Cleveland, over the last 10 years that have not had government support, mainly done by institutions in the private sector without government support. But if we're truly going to be successful, however, there has to be economic growth and wealth creation in the city and this region, but it is essential that we have true wealth creation among those who traditionally have been left out. Now, community benefits is how we approach this, community benefits. And we attempt to connect that growth and that prosperity with local companies and local citizens in terms of contracts and jobs. I call it self-help. Self-help, when you take a dollar in our economy, whether it's from the public or the private sector, and you invest it in our local economy, turning that dollar around multiple times in our local economy, creating growth, creating prosperity, creating jobs, as well as creating revenues for the operation of our city. Now, the economic growth and investments, however, are not even across the city of Cleveland. They're not even. The model and the strategy of economic development and the tools and programs that we use do not work in every neighborhood of the city of Cleveland. Example, if the city invests $1 of public dollars in downtown Cleveland, we can bet on $8 to $9 a return on that $1 public investment. If we invest $1 of public dollars into a neighborhood doing well, we can look forward to $3 to $4 of return. But in some neighborhoods, if we invest $1 of public dollars, we cannot expect anything in return in terms of private investment. We have to change our investment strategy and change our investment model to make these neighborhoods achieve economic growth. Now, we're working on a new model that will allow for this public investment and better ensure that this investment will create economic growth that will not require perpetual subsidies for it to stay alive. Now, I'm not talking, and I want to be clear, because as I've gone through 10 years of being mayor, people like to focus on the project sometime, which is great. But we're not talking about projects here. We're talking about transformation of neighborhoods and having that transformation benefit the people, not just of all of the bigger part of Cleveland, but of that particular neighborhood where that investment occurs. In order to accomplish that, we have to create policies that lead to economic growth and wealth creation among those who have been traditionally left out. And there's a need and a necessity for the private sector to take risk where they would not have taken them before. Now, to help in this regard, I've created, along with the help of Cleveland City Council, I've created a $25 million fund for neighborhoods where traditional development tools and programs simply don't work. This is not a nice thing to do. We're not trying to be nice. This is not a nice thing. This is a necessity to ensure Cleveland's future, and it will create a demand for a better quality of life in those neighborhoods. Now, the city is not a private corporation. We're not a private corporation. So our bottom line is not profit. We're not set up to make profit. Our bottom line is service delivery. City services are essential to quality of life in Cleveland and its neighborhoods. Our ability to deliver abundant and quality service will make us a city with neighborhoods of choice where people will choose to live, work, play, and do business. To get there, however, the city has to be fiscally sound, and there has to be revenue that will allow us to pay for that quality service. Now, over the last 10 years, as mayor, the city of Cleveland has demonstrated sound fiscal management and cost control through operation efficiency. But this has carried us to this point thus far. But going forward, the city needs more revenue, not only to maintain the service that we have, but to increase our capacity to deliver more and better service if we want to guarantee our future. Now, we have a lot of economic development in Cleveland, and we've retained and we've created thousands of jobs. But the city of Cleveland's operating budget is not seeing the direct benefit in terms of overall revenue. When the recession hit in 2009 and carried into 2010, the city of Cleveland lost $27 million in income tax alone. That was a factor of layoffs, loss of corporate profit, and really the slowdown of our economy as a result of the recession. In 2008, the city's income tax revenues was $290 million. In 2010, that figure was $263 million. Again, a loss of $27 million, just in income tax alone. From 2010 to this present year's projection, however, there is an increase in income tax revenue of $51 million. Our economic investments and our income tax revenues are demonstrating that we have had significant growth. In 2008, the city's revenues for its operating budget was $524 million. 8 years later, today, it's the same. People are working, companies are profitable, but the city of Cleveland, again, has not directly benefited from that growth in terms of the revenue for its operating budget. Now, I'm going to be redundant. I'm going to say it again because I want it to sink in, right? Even though we had a $51 million increase in income tax revenue, there is no growth in the city's operating budget revenue. There's a reason for that. We've had an annual loss of $20 million in property tax directly related to the recession, where we have not recovered in terms of property value. We've had an accumulative loss of $111 million in state funding since 2011. And we have, in 2016, we have a loss of an additional $30 million as compared to what we were receiving in 2010 and 11. An additional loss in fines, forfeitures, and red light camera revenues of $13 million gives us a total of $63 million of annual revenue permanently lost to the city of Cleveland in less than 5 years. The question, why is this important? This is important because it makes the city of Cleveland's operating budget not structurally balanced and forces us to use carryover balances of tens of millions of dollars each year to balance out the next year. This year, we will carry over $42 million from 2015 to balance out this year's budget. Now, this is not extra money that we have, but it's the result of us saving and cobbling together money throughout the year of 2015 in order to build up that balance to have it so we could carry it over to 16. What it meant was that the best I could do in 2015 was to maintain service with no increase in service, maintain the service we had with no increase in that service. Now, it also leads to a conclusion, and that is that I will not have enough money in 2016 to cobble together or save during the year to balance out 2017 to fill the gap between cost and revenue. Not only have we lost revenue, but we have additional costs. Example, our collective bargaining agreement, which is an additional $27 million, which is an increase from 2015 to 16, and really that's a factor because 80% of our operating expense is in wages and benefit. We also have the consent decree, which in this year, the first year, the startup cost will be just over $10 million and a reoccurring cost going forward of just over $7 million. And this does not include our staffing, deployment, and equipment study that we're required to come up with today, this year, and we will be implementing in 2017. Now, I don't want you to think that there's a problem with employees getting raises or with a consent decree. It's not. I would have been able to maintain our costs and the revenue we needed to pay for that cost and cover the consent decree if we had the $63 million that we lost in annual income. The only thing left for the city of Cleveland to do in 2017 is to lay off employees and to cut or eliminate service. This means we will not meet our bottom line as a city, our bottom line of delivering quality service, and neither will we be able to guarantee that we can position this city for the future. That is why I am challenged. That is why I am proposing a 0.5% increase in the income tax that will give us $80 million, which is enough to cover the gap between costs and revenue, thus making us structurally balanced and giving us the capacity to purchase additional service that we will need for the future. You know, at my last State of the City address, I was asked by people in regards to the Department of Justice as to whether or not I believe there was a need for change in the Division of Police. My response was that although I did not agree with all of the findings, that I did know that there was a need for change. You know, I support change. I support more than change, I support reform. But I wanted to be real change and real reform, if you recall the conversation last year, not just something that was political or something that would just get us past the moment. So we went to work with our local U.S. attorney, the DOJ, and we entered into a nationally recognized consent decree that will give us the tools we need for real reform that has substance to it and that can be sustainable. Now, in the past, we were doing things, but we were doing them incrementally, one at a time. And that just couldn't be sustained because it stood out there by itself. The consent decree gives us the ability now to make complete reform that can and will be sustained. But we want to go beyond the consent decree. We want to go beyond. And I'll give you a few examples. The consent decree requires that we come up with a recruiting plan, a plan for recruiting. Now, we want to go beyond that. We want to go beyond that and have online application and online testing. Now, what does this do for us? It gives us a constant live list of qualified applicants to go into the academy. Also, under civil service rules in the charter, we can only pick one out of three of the applicants to go into the academy. Now we have the ability, again, with the help of council putting on the ballot, we have, and the people voting for it, we have the ability to pick one in 10. That means we can go deeper into the list to pick candidates who have a better urban experience in terms of their knowledge of the culture they will be policing and will be reflective of the community they will be policing in terms of race or gender or whatever else is necessary for us to move forward. Crisis intervention training, another key component of the consent decree. Consent decree requires that we have 8 hours of training for every officer. We're going to do 40 hours for our cadets. We'll do 40 hours for our cadets, and then we eventually will train all of our police officers with 40 hours of crisis intervention, and then we'll have an ongoing 8 hours every year for every police officer. Now, why is this important? It's very important. Because when a police officer goes on a call where there's a crisis or some episode, I will tell you that there's not always a crime associated with that. So what this allows us to do is have people go to a scene and be able to de-escalate a situation rather than escalate it. Now there's a staffing deployment, and I'll be finished soon. There's a staffing, the deployment and equipment study, as I mentioned, we're required to do this year for implementation next year. We want to make sure that when we do that, we want to do it not just to meet the consent decree requirements, we want to do it as a tool for crime reduction. Now, in wrapping up, now these things that I've just mentioned and all the other things I've mentioned will help and better position Cleveland for the future, but is not sufficient to get us completely there. Even if we accomplish all of what I've said throughout this presentation and more, even if we accomplish having progressive policies, show economic growth and prosperity, be structurally balanced with a 0.5% increase in our income tax, continue progress towards quality education by renewal of the school levy, or become a model of urban policing through our consent decree, we will only be successful. We will only be a city who is successful. We are striving to be a great city, a city that provides for its people and allows all to participate in the quality of life and the prosperity that has been created, a city that will serve as a beacon that will provide direction in darkness. We will become a light on the hill, a great city. And people will say, let us go to Cleveland to see how it's done. Thank you very much.
This may be our first mid-forum standing ovation in City Club history. Today, we're enjoying the 2016 State of the City Address with Mayor Frank Jackson. We're about to head into the traditional City Club question and answer period. We welcome questions from everyone. City Club members, guests, students, or those of you joining us via radio broadcast or webcast. Please form a line behind the two microphones at the front of the room to ask your question. If you'd like to tweet a question, please tweet it to at the City Club, and our staff will try to work it into the program. We want to remind you that your questions should actually be questions, brief and to the point. Now, if you're ready, Mr. Mayor, it's time to begin the Q&A. First question, please.
Yes, what can Cleveland be doing to make immigrants feel honored and welcome in this city? And what can we do to help the citizenry as a whole be more appreciative of these immigrants?
Well, I don't think that people aren't appreciative of immigrants because we're all immigrants. So I don't think that's, I know there's this notion that people in Cleveland or other are not appreciative. Now, there are people talking about that, but that's not Cleveland. And so what we do is we support Global Cleveland, which is our main focus. Our main focus is to support Global Cleveland because they were set up and we participated in setting them up for this very purpose. And you have several levels of opportunities here. You have the immigrants, those who are professionals or those who have the financial wherewithal, you know, they can choose to go wherever they want to go. But we want to make sure that they choose Cleveland. I think our medical institutions and our financial institutions, our businesses, really provide a great choice for them to choose Cleveland. But they will be okay because they can choose where they go. The ones that I'm concerned the most about are refugees. That's because these are people who are leaving a situation. And that situation, whether it's political, economical, or social, it is causing them to leave their home. And that is where people don't want to absorb them and bring them in. But we are built on immigration and refugees. So I just believe that supporting Global Cleveland, Councilman Semperman will be going over there pretty soon, and he has enthusiasm to put all this together and make it work for us, and I look forward to working with him on it.
Good afternoon, Mayor Jackson. I'm Anthony Price. I'm Vice Chair of the City Club Youth Council.
Yes, sir.
And I'm a senior at Shaw High School. Thank you for coming today. Mm-hmm. My question, you talked about transforming communities.
Right.
So what can youth, specifically myself, do to ensure that the city will become stronger in the near future?
Well, it's always about the work you put in, right? If you put hard work in, then you get a good result. You put BS in, you get BS out, right? And so what we have to do, and particularly among young people, is to understand what should be accepted and not accepted in terms of the cultural parameters of how that neighborhood functions. And we, you know, it's very challenging today to be a young person. I don't know if I could have survived. You know, and young people today are very challenged with all of what's coming at them and all the everything that's happening. So whenever you find young people who come up out of that environment and who are attempting to and struggling to do the right thing in spite of all that, we need to give them support. We need to give them support in whatever way that we can. And I think that young people have the ability now to have a voice not only on the local level but the national level and to express what it is that they believe is in the interest of young people and what their real problems are rather than let somebody defining that for them. But the key to it is you have to be persistent. If you think you're just going to have the right conversation about it and don't do anything, ain't nothing going to happen, right? You have to be persistent. And that means that you won't always get the recognition that you believe you should get because people go to drama. But if you're persistent in what you do and you stay on point, you stay on message, and you keep going, you will see as you go along that things will gradually be able to change in that area of influence that you have. If you believe you're going to change the world, then you're going to be greatly disappointed. Okay.
Mayor Jackson, first of all, I would like to say to you and to all your departments, thank you for the work that you do to keep Cleveland a great city. So thank you.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
As we think about the Republican National Convention, the short-term benefits to the city are obvious in terms of revenue generation and increased capacity for visitors. But as we think about the long-term benefits, what do you expect or hope for from the RNC?
You're right. There are two things here. Whenever you have 50,000 people and you put them in one spot, there's something going to be happening, right? And they're going to be spending money, so the hotels will be full, the venues will be full, the people will be moving around downtown, they're going to neighborhoods. So you'll get a lot of activity. There'll be businesses who are investing just to capture that benefit of those 50,000 for that short period of time. You know, they're ramping up with bringing on their capacity for more employees, you know, getting things, all that kind of stuff is going on. The real long-term benefit, I think, is more about how people view Cleveland. There will be, out of that 50,000 people, is projected there'll be over 15,000 media people. Now, these are media people from around the world. And how Cleveland comes across through that media to the world, well, you cannot pay for that. You can't get a public relations firm or try to brand yourself. You can't do that, right? That is invaluable as to what that will do for us going forward. Already, if we handle this right now, if you go the other way, it'd be a negative thing. So you got to handle your business right. Already, we've seen at the new convention center, and even here, there have been people who've come to Cleveland because we've won the Republican National Convention. And there have been people who've done little small shows or small meeting groups or had conventions who came here because of that. I believe that after the Republican National Convention, after we show the world what Cleveland really is and who we really are, that there will be people who will be interested in coming here. And if we give those delegates and we give those other people among that 50,000 a good experience, then they too will go back to wherever they live, whatever business they own or wherever they work. They will have a positive attitude, a positive conversation, and if a choice comes up as to where they want to go visit, where they want to do things, it will be Cleveland. That, to me, is the long-term benefit. Now, the question becomes, who participates in that? It's just what I talked about. Because that, to me, is not success. It is a great tool. It's a great tool that we have to be able to use, but the success is whether or not the participation in that prosperity and that quality of life is broadly distributed so that everyone can benefit. That's the real question, and that will be our challenge.
Good afternoon, Mayor.
Hello.
Colleen Cotter from the Legal Aid Society of Cleveland.
Yes, ma'am. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you. And thank you for your speech today.
Thank you.
My question is about lead poisoning. This has been a decades-long problem in the city of Cleveland and in communities around the country. What's the city's plan to address lead poisoning, and what role can folks in this community play to partner with the city to actually put an end to poisoning our children?
Well, I will tell you, this is not one decade-long issue. This is decades in a very plural sense. If I understand it correctly, the prohibition against lead in paint was back in 1977 or late 70s. So every house that was painted before that time has lead paint in it, inside or out. And we have an old housing stock, so I will tell you that I don't know what the percentage, but I would not be surprised if it wasn't in the 80s or something like that percentage of our houses that have lead problems. So let's start there with the problem that we have. And what happens is, as we move forward, the question becomes, what is the city going to do about it, or what someone else is going to do about it? Everything that we've been successful at as a community and resolved, we've done it as a community. Now, I think the Ohio legislature passed some law that said it basically prohibits us from suing paint companies. So if you believe that if 80% or more of our housing stock has lead in it in some kind of way, then the remediation of that is thousands of dollars per house. You can see the magnitude of the amount of money you would need to do that. And if you just think the government's going to do that, then you're not going to get much done, because there's a limited amount of resources for government to do those things. There has to be a real partnership with government, the public sector, the private sector, and the philanthropic sector under a cohesive plan to do that. Now, we're working on, I think I forget Natoya is here, so she would be better able to answer this. I think we might do 200-300 houses a year with the resources that we have. We may do that. But that's a drop in the bucket. It's less than a drop in the bucket. So in order for us to really impact this and not just get past the moment, but to impact this, it has to be a true partnership, public, private, and philanthropic, on a very strategic plan and a pathway as to how to eliminate that in a period of time. And we have not gotten there yet. We have not gotten there yet.
Mayor, good morning, good afternoon, rather.
Afternoon.
My
afternoon.
Name's Tom Olmsted. I'm with St. Vincent Charity. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes.
I wanted to just sort of get in the weeds for a moment. You mentioned the development of a $25 million fund that's going to go to specific communities in Cleveland for economic development and community development. Again, recognizing your role, can you speak more specifically about whether any communities have yet been identified in terms of getting that kind of funding or partial funding? And secondly, what would be the criteria for them? For example, where you grew up, the Central Cleveland area and the Campus District.
Right. Well, there's no criteria set yet. And the reason for that is, and we'll answer your first question, is that there's no specific neighborhood chosen because we're developing the criteria. Now, but one of the underlining things that we're talking about, traditionally when people talk about economic development, community development, they come to the city, they want a project done. So they want a project. We're saying that that model of economic or community development does not work throughout the city of Cleveland. So we want to look at how do you transform that neighborhood of which you could leverage $25 million, or it could be three neighborhoods, or four, or two, whatever it may be. And so in leveraging that, but that means when you leverage it, you have to have the private investment, right? And you also have to have other public investment. I'll give you an example, public transportation is a very key component of how we will be evaluating this. If you have acres of vacant land, but you have good public transportation, and you have acres of vacant land, why is it that there's no development there when the opportunity is there, but over here there is development? There's something that makes that difference. So what we're attempting to do in working with the private sector is to figure out what is it that will give them the kind of comfort to take the kind of risk and to give up something in order to make that happen. Now, I know it's not the details that you want, but it is the approach that we're using. Now, there's a man, a young man, at, I think is at Cleveland State, and Mr. Ratner brought him in to look at neighborhoods. And he really broke Cleveland out into basically two types of neighborhoods. You have the consumer neighborhoods. These are neighborhoods that are doing well. And they don't produce anything in terms of like manufacturing and stuff like that. What they produce is quality of life. They produce lifestyle. And people consume that. People purchase that because they want to live there. They want to locate a boutique business there. They want to do that. So those neighborhoods do quite well with the tools that we have and the resources that we have. The other neighborhoods that I'm talking about are neighborhoods that have the greatest opportunity for Cleveland's future in terms of development for progress, because these will become production neighborhoods. They have vacant land. They have infrastructure, whether it's public roads or public transportation. They have access to freeways, all these things. But they still cannot get those things that would transform that neighborhood into a viable neighborhood where people can have a better quality of life and have opportunity to get employment. Those are the neighborhoods that we're looking at, that type of neighborhood. So it's not a specific criteria that somebody can write a proposal for right now, but it's that notion that I'm speaking of that many neighborhoods, particularly on the east side of Cleveland, qualify for, and some neighborhoods, particularly on the near west side, southwest side.
Thank you.
Okay?
Good afternoon. My name is Julian Huff. I'm a sophomore at New Tech East. And my question to you is, what did you learn in high school that has made you so successful to this day?
You know what? I would tell you what I learned, what I should have learned in high school. You know, let me explain that to you. I didn't do too well in high school. I didn't do too well. Let me just point out something to you. It goes to the other young man's question about what can young people do. I didn't do too well. I would have went to East Tech if I'd have stayed in my neighborhood school, but I wound up going to Max Hayes because I wound up taking a trade. I was a machinist. But I graduated in the bottom third of the bottom third. So I didn't do that well. And so after I left, I'm going to get to the point, long about answer, but I'm going to get to the point. So after I left school, I was almost 20 years old, about 19 and a half. I had failed so many times. And so I was so old that they drafted me into the Army. And I had to go down there and tell them, that, hey, look, I'm still in high school, so they let me go. Within 4 months after I graduated in June, in October, I was in the Army. So I did my time in the Army, did my tour duties wherever they sent me, came back, ran around in the streets for a while. Then maybe when I was about 26 or 27 years old, I went to community college. And I had to take remedial courses. I could read and write and do math and stuff like that, but I couldn't do it at a level that would allow me to pass a college course, right? So I did that. I learned how to read the books. I learned how to interpret them. I learned how to write paper. I did all that stuff. Then I wound up with the associates, bachelor's, master's, and law, right? Now, why am I telling you this? I'm giving you that long story because what I learned in high school age helped me immensely to overcome challenges in the street. It immensely allowed me to understand the academic side and how it pertained to me as a young black man in an urban center. So you have two opportunities for education, and don't deny either one of them. Get the academic side, do well, learn how to study, learn how to interpret, learn how to do all that stuff, but never forget who you are and where you come from, because that is that will be the best education you have. It will allow you to overcome things, and the academic and formal side will become a tool for you to be able to use to do, as the other young man said, how can I now, as a young person who has achieved this academic thing, but I have a grounded knowledge of who I am and what my environment is and who I serve, and how can I use those two to better service the community that I come from? So you have to get everything you can get in the school. Learn it. But do not forget who you are, where you come from, and as so as you apply the academic side, then you can apply it in a way that's to your benefit and who you care and who you love. Okay?
Good afternoon, Mayor. For-profit charter schools, yeah, underperforming charter schools,
right,
online charter schools continue to drain serious funding from our public schools, including Cleveland. My question is, I know you don't like this going on. Are there any members in your staff or anything that you are doing to advocate for public schools and to try to clean up that issue?
A renewal of this levy in November will help. Will help. Because contrary to what some people say, that we cannot expect an individual or an organization or institution to do better if we do not give it the support, not only financially, but morally, right? So that helps. And so the renewal of this levy will give the financial support, but it also give the moral support. So let's start there. Part of our reform program that we had reached agreement with the state on, state legislature and the governor, one of the key components of that was the Transformation Alliance. And its responsibility is, main responsibility, is to review all charter sponsors who want to open up a charter in the city of Cleveland. And we have criteria that we have developed with them to measure whether or not we will recommend to the state, because we can't tell them what to do, but we recommend to the state that we want this charter sponsor to open up this school because they are a great charter, or we do not want them to do it because they're a poor charter. Now, we've had a couple of situations under the alliance where charter sponsors have come forward where they wanted to open. One, we actually approved. We felt that it was doing a decent job and we should give it a chance to move forward. The other, that most recent one, and I won't mention the name, is that we're recommending to the state that that particular chartered school not be reauthorized by the state. So that is how we attempt to do it, because, you know, again, I'll be finished in a minute. And again, education is our key. Just like I talked to the young man, education is our key. Our failure to educate our children and educate them in a way that they can be competitive on a national and international basis will be not only the failure of us as a city, be the failure of us as individual leaders in fulfilling our duty and responsibility to our children. And so we put a lot of effort into this. We spend a lot of capital, whether it's financial, political, or otherwise. It's all about education. A well-educated young person will have the ability to think for themselves, and I'm not talking about just creating little worker bees. I'm talking about a well-rounded individual that can make good decisions about their lives so that they can better position themselves and their family and their loved ones in our environment. So thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.